Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Official space piracy this week.
Oh, what's right.
It's sanctioned because...
Right, we're not even joking, folks. We are not even joking. On the show this week, you might remember last week we had a nice little announcement of Space Pirates and Zombies 2 coming out, which is funny because I didn't tell you guys this before the show, but like 2 days before you sent me that, someone like commented on a thing. Have you heard anything about Space 2? Oh, I haven't heard a thing. I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on. You know, I have no idea. I hope they release something soon. 2 days later, I get an email. Like, holy crap.
It was like saying Beetlejuice three times.
It really, really kind of was. Joining us this week, we have two guests, both from Toronto, Canada, right?
Vancouver.
And we have Andrew Hume Richard Clifford of Min-Max Games, the guys behind Space Pirates and Zombies, now the upcoming Space Pirates and Zombies 2. Welcome, gentlemen.
How's it going? Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you for coming on. It is a delight. Now, I got to tell you, the listeners, something. When I started this site, I was talking to you, Andrew. You were like the most supportive guy, honestly. You were like super supportive. I just have to thank you for that publicly. You were super supportive. You sent me stuff. You know, you sent me stuff to put on the site. You sent me like review codes and stuff. And like I think the site's first review was the game with bounty hunters, I think.
That might have been it, because I know it was the first something, because we were talking about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's really grown big now.
So that was my first review, and I just wish I could do it full time to put as much effort into it as possible. But yeah, you guys really kind of helped me get my feet on the ground, and I just want to thank you publicly for that, because that really just it means a lot. Because the site's a labor of love, and you know it's a love letter to the genre, and any help I get with that is always appreciated.
So. Well, you're welcome, and thanks for giving us the exposure. We were kind of in the same position at that time as well. Like, anyone who would talk to us, please talk to us. Yeah.
Right.
So great. It's a good fit.
Well, I'm sure it's not like that now, right? I'm sure you guys have a little notoriety, right?
The first email we sent was to you.
What?
Yeah. I told you right back.
I told you
we were going to talk to you right away when
I'm
we had something, and we did.
I'm a little verklempt. No, no, that's great. I love being supportive of as many developers as I can. Yeah, the site, I mean, has mutated into from a review site to a news site, mostly, because that's what I have time for. But the news about your game is super exciting, because that wasn't the first time I had been asked about the sequel.
It was happening to us quite a bit, too. Really hard not to show anything for
I'm
so
sure.
long.
I'm sure. I can't even imagine. Before we get into the sequel, though, if I can't even imagine someone listening to this podcast doesn't own the game right now. I mean, I think on a Humble Bundle, you could have gotten it for a penny on one of the bundles somewhere. So, guys, if you don't own the first Space Pirates and Zombies at this point, just stop listening. Go and get it right now. Seriously, because we're going to talk about it, and it's a great game. And everything, and it's cheap. It's like so cheap, and it's gonna get even cheaper because it goes on sale all the time.
Everyone says that it's so hard to get your game put on sale. Actually.
No, it's not. And you guys
all on sale are like, you're, oh, please, put our game on sale. We want people to play.
No,
it's actually
nice
to get your game on sale.
You guys' game has been on sale at least a dozen times since I started my site, at least.
Oh, yeah, it has been. We've had some really good luck with certain sales. Now it's a little harder, but it's like, who wants to talk about spaz, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, gamers and gaming is a fickle industry because some people love talking about older stuff, but there's kind of a limit. Like, if you're only, like, a couple years old, you're not in that nostalgia phase yet. So, like, you're like, whatever. But if you're, like, older than, like, 4 or 5 years, ooh, rose-colored glasses all of a sudden, you know? So so it's kind of a weird place for spaz to be in. But, yeah, folks, the game has been on sale so many goddamn times.
It was on sale on a Humble Store on the weekend, but I think it's over now.
Oh, was it? It probably was. I couldn't even notice. But you've been on Humble. You've been on Steam sales. You've been in other bundles. I mean, if a space game fan does not have this game by now, there's no freaking excuse. Absolutely not. So if you haven't played it, let me just run it down for you. It's a top-down game, similar to maybe a little bit of, like, think. I always think of more like subspace, but it can also be compared to Asteroids a little bit in how it controls. There's really no physics. Well, there is a little bit. But you're basically, you have a mothership, and you have these other ships that you let jump around the solar systems and do little missions and get faction points for the good for the cops or the civilians. And you're basically trying to gain knowledge and money and metal, I believe, to upgrade ships and research new ships and technologies. Because eventually a zombie horde is going to break out, and you need to be prepared.
Yes.
So basically the game is a lot of fighting and then some mining and then some little bit of fighting. A lot of fighting. But that's one of the great things about this game, because one, when ships blow up, they leave not only like debris you can like mine, but like intelligence and crew. And you could steal crew, which I always loved. I always loved the little guys that you can like tractor in. Like there was that one ship that held like it was the cruise liner. It was the liner, I think, that just held an insane amount of crew. So you can just fly around and just hijack people left and right.
Probably the big bus.
Yeah.
That one. Oh, I love that thing so much. But it was a really fun game, folks. Really fun game. Some people had some problems with it, which I do want to talk about in a minute. But overall, it's a really No. I mean, I think when you're designing a game, you try. I'm not a designer, but I've talked to enough to know that you can't prepare for everything. You know, there's no way. So I do know some people who complain about the mid game being a bit grindy in Spaz. I'm sure you've got that as well.
We got a lot about the end game because we kind of turned the whole game on its head.
Right.
Not a lot of people even made it that far. Maybe 10% of the people made it that far. But we thought it was so cool as designers to go like, oh, and here, we can completely steam on you. But it wasn't actually as cool as we thought.
I'll be honest. My short attention span didn't let me get that far either. I'm just going
to
be.
Yeah, most people didn't. It's a long, long game. Now, the funny thing is Richard and I could finish that game in 5 to 8 hours. And we thought that's how long it took. It takes 40.
So, because when you have a game like that with all these side missions and you're giving with all these side missions and things, people want to do, like me, I want to do every side mission. I want to go to every solar system.
They just keep coming. They were randomized. So,
yeah, I know, but I want to do them anyway. I want to do every single one of them. So I was.
We thought we were better designers than we were at that time. We were fairly good at building tech, but when we were working in a AAA studio, you don't really get unfiltered people's responses to your game. And now we did, and we've taken all that in. Sometimes it's really kind of heart-wrenching, but we try to take all in and adjust how we think about things.
Speaking of AAA studios that you were in the past, like what did you guys do before Space Pirates and Zombies?
Your history first.
Yeah, I went to one of those crazy video game design colleges you see on TV that likes to take your money.
Oh, yeah, like pass me the controller. I need to tighten up the graphics.
Exactly one of those. So I was one of the lucky few that managed to get a job out of it. Except when I got into that job, I started doing something that was completely different than what I went to school for. I started to learn how to do like some programming and stuff. And I was at Radical Entertainment for...
Oh, yeah.
For like 7, 6...
No, more than that. No. You were there for 5 years.
Five years. So we worked on Scarface. We worked on another canceled Scarface game, sadly. I worked on Prototype for a little while. We worked on another couple of canceled games.
I did love Prototype. I gotta say, I did love Prototype. Can I tell you a Prototype story real quick? Do you mind?
Okay.
My girlfriend is not into video games at all. But one day, she had a really bad week of teaching and needed and wanted to vent and said, Brian, give me a video game. So I think the most violent video game I have is pretty much at the time Just Cause 2, so I give her that. Too many buttons, too much aiming, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, okay, there's this other violent video game I have that called Prototype. Less buttons, probably more violent even than I realized. She played it for like 8 hours straight, just eating people and throwing air conditioner units at helicopters. And all kinds of wacky ass crap. I mean, it's a really fun game, people, if you haven't played it. It's very violent and very fun. I haven't played the sequel, though.
So did Radical do the Hulk game?
They did. It was very much a continuation. Yeah. It was a spiritual successor to the Hulk
game. Yeah, because
they wanted to, you know, utilize the tech and everything.
Oh, yeah, man, I love that Hulk game.
I think they're kind of working, yeah.
Oh, I actually
got it. Game that wasn't cool enough to save the company, unfortunately.
I actually got that game from my recent PlayStation 2. I haven't played it yet, though.
Oh, play it. Oh, do. Because if you like Prototype, it's Prototype with Hulk Smash. So,
now, I understand, now, I understand Scarface is not the game I would think it was. Like, it's I've had my eye on it for a while. It's more of kind of an open worldy thing. Like, what is Scarface?
It was a lot like well, I mean, at the time, you just couldn't help but compare it to Grand Theft Auto Vice City, but it was Radical's take on, you know, the open world crime genre. But, you know, of course, it had Tony Montana in it, and we wanted to put, like, Drug Wars elements into it. It was pretty cool, but it's, yeah, pretty old now, so.
Yeah, it was a fun game. You could probably still enjoy it. Yeah. There's so much swearing. We're affected by working on that game. We swear too much because of that game.
They encourage us to swear in company meetings and everything. They had a fuck up and everything. Sorry if I swore on your show.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, sorry about that. It kind of got into our being a little bit. And even when we started working on Spaz 1, Spaz 1 was open world for a while.
Yeah, you can kind of see where, like, even what we were saying about the previous game, where a lot of people found it grindy with a repetitive mission structure, you can almost kind of see where we were coming from with these open-world games that have hundreds of side missions. It took a little while to kind of change our thinking. You know, we wanted to make a space game, but, we had spent the last 5 years working on an open-world Grand Theft Auto-style game because we also had gotten 2.5 years under development of a Castle sequel.
History-wise, for me, is a little different. I don't know. Should I go into that, or is it going to, or not?
Go into what?
History. Or are we going to go into something else? I go into history.
Go ahead, yeah.
So, yeah, I started back in 2000. I went to university and got a computer science degree. I wanted to write AI, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I went and I interviewed at Black Box Games in Vancouver. And I had a pretty good GPA, and I interviewed to be a tester, and I was unqualified. And I found that quite interesting and saddening because I really wanted to get into the games industry. But like, how the game industry tends to work, I knew somebody through a friend, and he got me in, but I was actually the IT department. So I worked in that as IT there for a while. It was about 50 guys I was IT for. And then they gave me a chance, and I started doing QA. I went to QA lead while I was doing IT, and that was good. I didn't crack, so then they put me on scripting for something, and that was much closer to what I wanted to do, and they let me go along with that. So my first game was Sega Soccer Slam, and I scripted AI, and I thought at the time, like, being a scripter was kind of a really negative thing. Like, I wasn't, because I was trained as a programmer, right? This is more for anyone who's trying to get into games and just thinks, oh, I want to be a designer, I'm not a designer, blah, blah, blah. As long as you touch the game, you're kind of a bit of a designer, unless you're in some weird role. You can make a little corner of the game yours, always, and I did that. But, you know, you always have kind of an inferiority complex. Black Box got bought by EA, and I went on to work on hockey, and then I started writing actual AI for their hockey game. And then by then I was like, oh, I really want to be a designer. But, oh, I'm only a programmer, so I'm never satisfied. Kind of thing. But again, I didn't realize I was actually being a designer. I was writing the defensive AI for the hockey. Now, you're designing it, right? But you don't understand that. Just like looking back, I kind of shake my head and look and think of how stupid I was, not realizing I was doing what I wanted to do. That, you know, it's just dumb. Next, I quit because I couldn't stand working in a kind of corporate environment that didn't suit me. So I made a company, and we made a game that never saw the light of day called Statesman, and we made that for pretty darn cheap. it was actually a board game, but it was using the Torque engine. And this is where things get lucky, because Scarface happened to also use a variant of the Tribes 2 engine, which is a Torque engine. So when I went into the interview at Radical, because I was completely out of money, I told them, yes, I've written 50,000 lines of Torque script, and blah, blah, blah. They needed someone to help them on Scarface. So they hired me to write island missions where people would blow out. And that's where I met Richard. And early on, I remember his first or second day I was there, you were talking to some programmer. You're like, Richard's getting mad. And I pulled Richard aside. Like, I was new to the company too, but I was like, you can't talk to a programmer that way. You know, he's an engineer. He's got experience. What are you doing?
Yeah, he was a troublemaker.
Yeah, he was a bit of a troublemaker. And I'm surprised we turned out to be such good friends, but, you know, I pulled him aside. I talked to him. And then a few days later, yeah, the guy was an idiot. I pulled him back and said, sorry, that guy's an idiot.
First impression.
Yeah, you were right. You were right. And then over the years at Radical, yeah, we worked on Scarface, and then they put us in an office together. We became really good friends. We worked on Scarface 2. We actually designed, the first design of Scarface 2 happened in a pub.
Are you talking about the, all right, Scarface? Why did I hear spaz?
Scarface 2 happened in a pub. It was quite nice. We just had a little piece of paper writing, okay, where would Tony go? Actually, I don't know if I could say where Tony went. Okay. Yeah, I won't say where Tony went. But anyway, we worked at Scarface 2. It was awesome. The whole team loved it. It was just amazing. Everybody who came on the project, we kind of brought them into the board game we made them play. They loved it, and they canceled it. So then that tore out Richard and I's hearts. We tried to make it continue at Radical, and Richard went on to Prototype at that point, and I went on to an undisclosed title that was quite large that got canceled, and then I went on to another undisclosed title that was a little less large but cool that got canceled.
Oh, I also went on to that project.
Yeah, you came on to that project too. So what happened was we had had a baby, and I came back from maternity leave. Before I left maternity leave, that project was kind of weird because we had a design team that was split. There was three of us who were really kind of thinking one way, and then another maybe six who were thinking the other way, and we never managed to quite mesh. But when I came back, nothing I talked about had changed since before I left for a month on maternity leave. So I just kind of said, I can't do this anymore. And I talked to Richard, and we left. And Richard, it was really great that he came with us, quite a vote of confidence, and we left together.
Well, we even started talking about this, like, before you left, because, you know, we'd go and have a coffee, and they're like, wouldn't it be cool if we could just go take our own camera, do it all at work?
Yeah, yeah. So then we left, and then a few days later, we said, holy shit, we left, what are we doing? Yeah. And I have a kid, right? And that was the other part of the decision, is that once I had a child, I realized that if I don't leave right now, I won't, because so I said, okay, I'm going to leave. And Richard and I went to the pub, and we decided to make Epic Space Game that would only take 6 months. And we said, in the last 6 months, it'll be no problem. It'll be great.
People accept us.
No problem. We just get the project, no problem. Yeah. So 18 months later, when I'm connected by Steve, Richard, that's kind of where we got to right when we released finally. The release of the beta on Impulse was not, oh, our game's finished, let's release. It's like, oh, crap, my house is about to go, I better release. And then we worked for a few more months on it and got it from the beta to a final state. And then Steam, is this getting too long?
What?
Is this crazy story getting too long?
No, I'm listening.
Oh, okay.
We're almost done.
Yeah, I'm almost done. So then you wanted to start a story. Then Steam contacts us, and holy crap, we actually won it now. And we went on Steam and got the number one sale place one day, August 15th, 2011, number one place. We still have a little picture of that. And things got a lot better after that. But it was a rocky road, and that's how we got to where Spaz 1 started selling. Spaz 2 story is much less interesting. We just worked hard and applied what we learned from people sending us love letters and hate mail and reading forms.
So how did you decide on whenever you were going to make Spaz? How was it like, let's make a top-down space game? Because you came out of these open-world 3D things and that. I mean, you wanted something that you could attack and get it over with, right? So kind of keep it simple.
A lot of it came down to, like, we were both playing a lot of old-school style games, in Armada Online, and we were firing up old copies of Star Control, and it's just we were playing that game again, but I wanted to make it at the same time. It was so polar opposite of anything we had worked on, where it was, you know, these huge, big budget, AAA, open world crimes. And like, no, I just want to make a top-down space shooter that's like everything I loved about Star Trek and Babylon 5 and zombies and goofiness. And especially after working on a prototype, I really wanted to work on something that had some color and a sense of humor and not make me depressed. That game was like brutal to work on. I like listening to people kill each other and eat each other all day long.
It was
a fun game. It's hard to dark environment. It's hard to shoot down for 18 months of your life while building it. But it was just we didn't even have any debate about what we wanted to make. We knew, like, we both played these kind of games. We both really liked Star Control back in the day, and what's the other one that we used to play? Space Rangers.
Oh yeah, Space Rangers. Awesome.
It almost was a no-brainer. We were like, okay, 2D, top-down, space action, balls-to-the-wall action, let's do this.
6 months, go, go, go.
6 months, go, go, go.
Five races.
16 races. Yeah, it's just that. I mean, you know, it went through some iterations, but like right away we knew we wanted to try to make some cool 2D top-down.
So what did your total dev time end up being?
2 years?
Yeah, well, we started July 20th. 2009, we started, and then it started selling on May 19th, 2011. It got onto Steam August 15th, 2011, and we supported it for an entire year after that. So we worked on it, I would say, over 3 years that we just kind of plugged and plugged and plugged. This is before early access or anything, so...
And that's 40 hours a week.
Yeah, this is, like, spazzing well, and we knew that there was when Spaz 1 came out as a 1.0 release, there were things that weren't quite right, so we wanted to add them. Like, yes, we probably should have sold the Bounty Hunter patch instead of put it out for free, but we figured that the game needed it to be complete, right? Mm. So we just put it out as part of the game.
Well, I'm sure that engendered a lot of goodwill, though.
I think it did, actually. We're really bad businessmen, like really awful.
But that's part of our strength.
Yeah, we're just really bad at it.
Part of your charm.
People are honest and fumble around a little bit with this. So.
Like, we wouldn't even be talking to you if we weren't drinking, because we're just too nervous to talk to people, but now it's fine. So we're not really wired that way. When we were in Radical, they had something called show and tells. And this, luckily, is a lot of companies have this. But on Friday, you would kind of go up and show what you did all week. And I remember likening it to the project manager, like taking a – because Rich and I worked on Metagame. And I said, it's like somebody cut me open, and I took a whole bunch of my guts in a wheelbarrow, and I'm showing it to everyone and just kind of pawing through it in front of a bunch of people. I don't want to do that. It's not ready, but I can understand how the process is. Like, we very much care about what we're doing, but we love it too much to show it until it's done, which is probably why the video took so long.
Right.
It's a different process. I mean, we sit in the white-gray cube stage for a long time, and companies can't accept that. They need to see something that looks cool in a month. And once they get that cool thing, regardless of how hacked it actually is, that's probably the love you're going to play when the game ships. And that's why the games are the way they are. But, you know, we don't want to show something that's like a bunch of cubes and stuff, but we need to start there. It's also a reason why we couldn't really do a Kickstarter. It's like, we can't Kickstart a plan for gray cubes interacting with red spheres. It's just, it doesn't,
if we
it takes a long time to get where we are. So.
If we'd done a Kickstarter, people would be really mad at us because of how much we changed the design as we go. If you're like, we would have promised stuff on day 90, and that stuff is the same now. We had, like, Richard and I had stuff that, like, a month or two in, we were at his house high-fiving, said, yeah, this is how we're going to do it. We've got all these different universes, and this is great, and we're doing this. High-five, it's awesome.
Yeah,
none of that. We don't want any of that. Yeah.
We even almost had a story element there where you're going through parallel universes. Yeah. But, I mean, like, so, like, we threw everything at the wall, right? What's going to stay? But that's the nice thing about being able to basically stay frosty, I like to put it. It's just... We iterate a lot, and we don't really have a design doc, like a master design doc per se, or
anything.
I don't do concept art either. I just put shapes into the game with colors on them, and we start from there. Like, does it look big enough? Does that silhouette look nice? It's all iterative.
Yeah, we have nothing really. Like, the best we get, I've got 5 sheets of paper on my desk that is stuff that I've written while we were at the pub. And most of it is irrelevant, but there might be something I put a whole bunch of stars next to that's important. And that's as far as the design doc goes for us. It's just like iterate. Both of us, because there's only 2 of us and we have a lot of trust, we don't need a plan. I trust Richard to do something really cool, and he trusts me to do something really cool. We both trust each other. Don't break the game! That's pretty much how it works.
Like, I mean, we meet once every week or two to make sure that we're at least working towards something common, but yeah, it's a tremendous amount of trust. You can't get away with this in a company of 100 people.
No.
Right.
And we're friends. I mean, right after this, we're going out together, so it's...
Yeah, it's...
I bought a house 5 minutes from your house. You know, that's just how
it is. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So are there any other people in the... I don't know, company? Do you call it company? Are there any other people in the company besides you guys?
Nope. No, it's just us.
Oh, wow.
Do our thing.
We do an ever so slight amount of outsourcing for some of the stuff we can't produce, like sound and music and some other stuff, but most of it's pretty much in-house here.
Yeah. If it's the game and the art and stuff, for the most part, it's Richard and I. We've got an awesome composer, Michael Flug. I hope I'm saying that right. He's great. Awesome portrait artist, Nate Abel. You haven't seen any portraits yet, but this time we're not having the old ones. I don't know how you describe them.
The ones that are
the Frankenstein portraits?
MS Tech.
Yeah. Yeah, no more MS Paint portraits. We've got someone who's actually got a, I don't know what he uses, Illustrator or whatever he uses, but he draws them, and they're all very, he very much understands the feel of Spaz.
He's a professional character artist, whereas I am not. So that's all there needs to be said about that.
it's good. And Spaz 1 has given us the opportunity to do that. We push it, as you probably saw with Spaz 2. We had a pretty heated argument day 1 of Spaz 2 development, like 2D or 3D. And it was, I mean, we were ready, like, you know, we were going, like, oh, let's just walk away and just go our own way. But in the end, it worked out. That was our only really big one.
Like, figuring out where the hell do we go from here.
Yeah. Well, because that was the question going to ask.
Conversation.
That's what I was going to ask, is how did you make the leap from 2D to 3D, and did you feel that was a necessary thing, that had to happen in order to get traction for a second game, or is it just like that enables you to do some cool things you couldn't do otherwise?
So I was personally at the time on the 2D side of the fence. But when we started working on this, we knew we couldn't use Torque anymore because it just didn't understand any of the multi-threading anything, and it was just so old, and
For the record, Torque's a very good engine, but it doesn't do multiplayer and it doesn't multi-thread.
So right,
it couldn't do it anymore.
So right from the get-go, Torque didn't understand multi-threading. It didn't understand multiplayer. It was getting a little dated, and we just couldn't fix the problems that people were having with it. We just couldn't.
You said Tribes 2 ran with that engine? That was a multiplayer.
The 2D one was a different beast altogether.
Yeah, this is the funny thing about Torque, because way back when I worked on Statesman, there's Torque 3D and there's Torque 2D. Torque 3D is very, very multiplayer friendly. Torque 2D, that component of the game was removed and a much simpler kind of, like, it is multiplayer, but it is related to, like, I click the button and therefore something changed. Like, it's just sending simple messages. It's
asynchronous.
It's not the same sort of thing. The Torque 2D was, I can't remember what the guy's name was, but one particular guy made Torque 2D, I believe, just for his game, and then gave it or licensed it for Torque. And it was quite good. Like, if you think about it, if we made Spaz 1 with 2 guys on Torque 2D, it actually was good. It didn't crash. It worked for, in the end, I think, the actual engine between us having the OpenGL and the DirectX, which got us around a lot of video card issues, maybe 1 in 10,000 people had an issue, which was good. which is what we actually wanted, because there were two of us answering problems. You can imagine if it was 1 in 100, it would have been really rough. I'm fairly certain that Unity will be hopefully at the same level of compatibility. So many people use it now, like it kind of has to be, I would assume. We're all ignorant in one basket, and we really like Unity now. I'm kind of an old curmudgeon when it comes to programming and stuff, and I don't know how much about programming you guys do, but like behaviors and things were always taught to me to be evil. We called them mix-ins way back in programming when you have multiple classes coming together. Anyway, I'm getting too nerdy. Anyway, now I'm converted to this method of components in items. Like our ships in the game aren't, we don't code a spaceship. A spaceship's got 40 components. It's got an engine component, a mech component, a maneuverability component, all this crap. All this stuff goes into it, right? And it's cool, but it's so different than what I'm used to. I'm used to this whole inheritance model where you'd have, like, you have an actor, you have a moving actor, and you have a ship, and you have a space station, and they all inherit and all that. You don't do that anymore. Not with how this works, anyway.
So when you have a ship that can be built out of different components like that, do you actually have a chunk of behavior code that is in each component so that when that component gets bolted onto a ship, the AI knows what to do with it because it inherits the code that's associated? Or do you just have...
Yeah. It's absolutely... The amount... No human can do this does. The amount of stuff that the ships have to go through, because when you put on... Like, if you put a wing on a ship, that wing has... So, like, what a component means is the component is essentially a behavior or a little chunk of code, like a code class that runs on that object. And there are a bunch of them. But when you build the wing has a gun. The gun has a pivot point, and the pivot point has the actual emitter point. The emitter point takes the ammo, and the ammo fires, and it has all of its business, and it has to know about the gun. And it's just the amount of data that is getting put around by this thing is just incredible, but you have to rely on Unity just not getting confused in the end. When you have a ship that's 30 pieces big, there is so much thinking going on to make that work. Like that component, that wing, that engine you put on the ship is a real thing. It is, and it knows what to do. To the point where there's one point in the trailer where Richard hits a ship with an asteroid and it's shooting a laser at the time. The laser still knows exactly what it's doing while it's being shot, because it's part of that component, which is like it's parented and parented and parented until we get to the point of having this big massive ship. It's quite complex. And you have to rely on, if you figure, okay, this engine component works, and I know that it can talk to other components, and therefore the whole must work, because there's no way to really test the whole, right? Because there's an infinite number of ships. It's crazy. But
so it's almost like you have to write an intercomponent API so they can talk to each other.
With the components, a lot of it is done through messaging. So a message will come, like, at some point in the video, a component gets attached to a ship. And it gets colored, and it gets colored to your ship's, your faction colors. And how something like that works is actually a message gets sent. It says, on faction added or some crazy thing. And that message is broadcast throughout that component, and anything can listen to that and do what it needs to do. So there's like an on faction added, on reactor power, on this, on that. And then like the guns come online, and you'll even notice that the guns go from being in an offline. Like we get a little bit too caught up in the details. We're going to have a video, like a Attenborough video of the life of an explosion or something of a ship. Our ship explosions take a good 30, 40 seconds to come to an end. Like once it's dead, you know it's dead, but it cracks like the Titanic, and it sinks, and it breaks into other pieces, and escape pods come out, and windows start blinking, and people get thrown out, and glass breaks based on the integrity of the component. Like it's stuff no one will ever notice, ever.
Hopefully somebody notices, because my fingers hurt.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty goddamn awesome. I wanted to ask you about the modular parts of the ship. Now, it sounds like not only will your mothership be able to steal parts, but your AI fleet ships will be able to do that as well?
you can probably design a little bit of your AI fleet. We're still up in the air about if we will let the AI have the magical super tractor beam of doom or not. Reason being, if the AI can steal parts, we're thinking, I don't know how much of the story you remember, but we're thinking of making the tractor an invention of Carl. Now, online, of course.
The Titan tractor.
Yeah. everyone will get a tractor online because it's pretty cool. You can, like, I don't know how many games have it or if any games have it, but you can, online, like me and Richard, can both grab an Astra and have an arm wrestle over this thing, and we're both, through the internet, at the same time, affecting this one object. Just, I want it, I'll hit you with it, And it's neat. It's kind of like on an elastic bandy, weird string thing. And that's cool. If we gave that power to the AI of actually stealing and rebuilding, we think it might be super frustrating because the AI will be much better at it than the player. Because the AI doesn't have to think about it, doesn't have to have trouble targeting the item. It will just become a vacuum cleaner. Like, if I can actually write AI that doesn't suck this time. But
So yeah. only the mothership is modular then.
Well, no, all the big ships should be modular.
Right.
But the mothership, the one that you're flying, there's a special piece that makes that tractor beam come out of, and that might be a story element that you have that thing.
Okay. Sorry, that's what I meant. Like out of all the ships, like you can control everything. That'll be the only one that's able to steal parts from other ships.
I think maybe. We have to see how it goes. Like, it's not a massively difficult programming task. It's a balance issue.
It's just we're still super early with this stuff. Yeah. So we just need to try it. Like, there's all, like, even just looking at the video, you could tell that, yeah, everything's cool with breaks. We have a lot of balancing work to do and game modes to build and story to write. We need to still get there.
I wanted to ask you guys about platforms because on the original Space Pirates and Zombies, it initially came out for Windows, and then I saw Mac OS support and then Linux support that came along for that. Have you considered a port to tablets in any way? Because, you know, being a fairly graphically simple top-down thing, I would think that it would maybe, unless there's a control issue. Yeah, like Spaz 1, take it to the iPad or something like that.
It's deceptive. Spaz 1 needs about 2.5 gigahertz CPU to run. The thing is, nothing can really get offloaded to the video card in that game, so the CPU didn't work and work. Believe it or not, Spaz 2 takes less computational power without all the graphical bells and whistles running than Spaz 1 did. So I use the same computer for both, but Spaz 2... it's funny, we have Richard's, his graphic mode is called Uber, and my graphics mode is called Ember, which is for the 7-year-old, you know, SHIT box that I program and work on. But that keeps us honest for the minimum spec. If I'm running on a garbage computer, then I can make sure that people can still enjoy themselves.
Okay, so what are the controls going to be like on this? Is it something that... Like, because Microsoft has that Surface tablet, which I bought one today. I'm a sucker. But you can run it as a PC, and it actually games pretty well. You can play Skyrim on it and stuff. But then if you take the keyboard off and then you're playing it in touchscreen mode, I don't know if it's worth your time to try to get some kind of touchscreen compatibility with this, given how small that market is. But then again, you're going to be the only player in the room. So
for Spaz 2?
Yeah, for Spaz 2.
Or Spaz 1.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Spaz 2, we've written something. There's kind of an in-between layer for input. We did it on purpose so that, like, now we let you use a controller. We couldn't last time because of how our flight mechanics worked. We have screen-relative controls now. So, like, my kid and my dad, my kid's 4, my dad's 75, they can both take a controller. They can't do mouse and keyboard. They don't have that ability. But they can take a controller, and they can actually fly and enjoy themselves a little bit. Like, they'll fly around and stuff, and they can understand what the heck they're doing, which is new, because in Spaz 1, that would not happen. The controls were a little bit weird, which was my fault. I've kind of learned since then. I have real trouble with Spaz 1 now when I have to go back and play. Like, if someone has a problem, Richard and I will send a save game and say, oh, our save game is broken. We're like, oh, no, okay. And we'll go and fix someone's save game. I have real trouble playing the game now just because I'm so used to the new control scheme.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The new control scheme is better, and like, It took a while for Richard to convince me. It's all Richard on that. He was right. As most cases, this is what happens with me and Richard. Richard and I have a big argument, and I'll dig my feet in for a few days, and then we'll both be mad, and then about 3 days later, I'll go, okay, Richard, you're right. I'll do it your
Sometimes way. Sometimes it takes a month or two.
Yeah.
As long as the game gets the best, that's all that matters.
Yeah. Well, I actually wanted to ask about the interface, because, I mean, I thought it was okay for the first game, but now that you're switching to 3D, what have you guys done to make it manageable?
It controls like a shooter. You will have no problem flying a ship. Your goal, I'm talking too much. You want to talk a bit?
I can talk a bit.
Yeah.
If you've played a first-person shooter in the last 15 years, you will probably feel pretty at home with Spaz. We've mentioned it a few times on the forums now, so we don't fly in full 3D, so it's still...
Right,
still
it's not flying. 2D flying, yeah.
Yeah, it's 2D flight, but we let you shoot in full 3D, so you can shoot up, shoot down, and we've got, like, vertical pieces, like some of the pieces have verticality that lets you manipulate that. When your ships turn, they bank quite severely, exposing your inner components. So depending on – the verticality does enter into it quite a bit. We just don't fly in 3D because we just want to keep the game fun and action-based and feeling kind of like a shooter or like a naval engagement where you're on the ocean.
In 2D, you can circle each other, and in 3D, you're at a certain point, you're doing that – you know, you'll fly past something – and you have to do that reticle chase in the corner and keep doing these loops around things to hit them. Mm. It is a naval battle now. It's very close, thankfully, to how a MechWarrior game would work. So if I'm flying to the left, I can aim, you know, straight ahead, which would be from the left flight would be like aiming off my starboard side, I guess.
Starboard.
Anyway, yes, I can shoot to the right and give you a full on broadside with that. But the neat thing is, you can't do in a old fashioned ship on the ocean because I can bank while I'm doing that, and my turrets on my left side can arc right over the top. If I do a hard turn, and I can hit you with absolutely everything, which is awesome. But as with everything that we're trying to do in Spaz 2, there's a downside. The interior of your ship, what we call the cores, which hold your reactors and your people and that stuff, are where your health is. Your wings and your engines and your nose aren't health. They're mostly armor, but they have the guns, okay? So flat and just going toe-to-toe with someone, they might blow off your wing and be able to hit your core. But for the most part, your wing will get hit. It'll take some damage. You can repair that because people aren't dying and getting sucked out into space. And you can hang in there. Once you make the hardcore maneuvers and your cores get hit, that damage is staying with you until you leave the level. That's where you're starting to get worn down. So this is where you get more of a duel. So whereas our fights in Spaz 1 are mostly point at that thing and unleash hell, now it's much more timing and hiding and watching the other guys have a dual duel. And it can be really rewarding in some cases.
Now, can you set your ship, can you tell your ship don't bank when you turn? So I just want to do flat rotation.
What?
Not currently. We probably won't do that either. You would just turn more slowly. It's a function of how fast you're turning.
Okay, so basically you just have to discipline yourself to not turn to where you expose your stuff because...
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and for the most part, what tends to happen, and the AI does this as well right now, is you tend to get to these quite nice, me and you are broadsiding their engagements, and if you are targeting on someone, you can see their capacitor, and you can get a pretty good idea of when they're going to shoot, like when they have enough power to shoot. And you can time that quite well. I have a few times the little ship, you know, managed to get four or five biggies just by timing, knocking out their engines and that kind of thing. It's if you're patient, you can do really well. If you decide, on the other hand, I've got a bigger ship, I'm just going to go in there and ram this guy and hit him, in some cases that goes really badly for you because you've exposed yourself and you've taken a lot of permanent damage. It might be, yes, you get that first ship in the three waves that are coming, but guess what? Wave three, you're going to be fighting while crippled. And it's a much, much, much more tactical game now. But if you really are thinking about when to fire, when to hide, when to turn, we have two shield modes even now. So you've got you have no shields, which takes no power, which is great. You've got regular passive shields, which stops energy and other shields. So if someone's shielded and bumps you with passive shields, and your shields just bump, and it's fine. It's like what shields should be for, because you don't want to, grind each other. We call it battleships humping. We don't want that to happen. when one person has, or when one has their shield down and they're just a piece of metal versus your shield, metal will pass right on through a shield. So will projectiles. Only shields only stop lasers. But you have something else called hard shields, which are the active shields that take a ton of power, but they stop absolutely everything. So there's kind of a trade-off there. Like, you can't shoot as much, but you can stop everything that's going to hit you. So what if you're going to ram, what you do is you wait for the other guy's shields to go down, put your hard shields on, and just whack him with that. And that can be quite cool. But then, about half the time, what I'll do is I'll be charging the AI with my shields down. Oh, I got this big front of my ship. It's got tons of health. I'm going to hit you. Because if I have my shields down, I have to raise your passive shields. I'm going to get you. No, you bastard. He gets his hard shields up, and I just ram right into his hard shields. So it's dueling. Everything has to be this kind of dueling and thinking right now. It's quite cool, and we kind of fell backwards into it as these different things like ramming and pieces breaking off from being shot. It's not something we planned. We just kind of got lucky with how different pieces fit together, and suddenly it became super strategic.
Yeah, did you guys ever play Tauldron's games, the Starfleet Command games?
I haven't. Oh, I think you've been.
I played them ages ago, but I wouldn't be able to recall any information.
Because what you're talking about here, like ships that are circling each other and worried about shield facing and shield state, and it's a more slow-paced, duel of broadsides kind of thing. And it reminds me a lot of that, because it was a fairly literal translation of the Starfleet battles rules. But it was like, you've got six shield facings, and you have to worry about exposing a shield in order to get a shot off, but then turning that shield away whenever an incoming shot's going to hit. It's kind of neat. That's one of my favorite games of all time. I used to play tournaments in that.
So we're doing something right.
Yeah.
It sounds a lot like that, which is great. There's also a Treasure Planet game that was kind of similar to that with ships in space.
That's kind of scary that there was like a Disney game with like Space Goofy in a pirate hat that was actually a killer game.
Great game. But I wanted to ask, you mentioned hide a couple of times when you were talking about that. Can you hide behind planets and asteroids that you're fighting and behind like nebula or in nebula and stuff like that? Is that what you mean?
Talk about destruction and hazards.
Well, we're still yet to implement anything where we have like cloak or anything like that. But we do, because you can bump everything in the game now, so you don't just pass over stuff like asteroids. Like, we actually have a level, like, we have a tangible level now for you to interact with.
Nice.
So, yes, taking cover behind asteroids is important, like, shooter.
Great.
But everything in the level is destructible, so your cover might not last.
Of course. That's how it should be.
Do you lose sensor?
Yes, you can hide behind asteroids and debris and stuff, but, depending on what they're unleashing at you, they can chip away at that asteroid. And that asteroid might go critical and explode. If you guys remember Wisps from the old game, they're coming back. So we wanted the level to be an actual entity in the game. So there was places for you to camp out at or take cover behind or hide behind. It's very much a tangible thing. Now, to answer your question specifically, no, you can't go and hide behind the planet. Those are animated skybox features, so you can't.
Right, but there will be things to use as cover every now and again, which is what.
Yeah, you can break those asteroids down and grab those pieces with your tractor beam and start throwing them around.
That was going to be my next question. Can you grab the asteroids with that tractor beam you mentioned and use them as wrecking balls of a sort?
Everything, like another ship's pieces, you can start pulling them off if you want to. Like everything, like for a time we had some static pieces into the level, some large static pieces, but they really didn't fit with how our whole game was becoming this very kinetic physics-based experience. So we cut that and said, everything's going to break down and everything can render to nothing.
Right.
So some of these large props are very complicated. So like the large asteroids, they'll break down into about 18 pieces.
Oh,
and
hundreds
then each
of pieces.
Piece, well, and each piece will break down into about 5 more. And then some of those pieces will break down further. And that's not even covering the plants and buildings and signage that's been put on them after the fact. That's just the rock itself. So there's a lot of stuff in there to make. We wanted the props to almost be on the level of the ships, where there's tons of pieces and you can break them off. A very, very kinetic experience. Feels very nice. Alive.
Well, they're super interactive. Like, yeah. So how our props work, like there's a prop, and the props know how to, they have a rule set for procedurally building themselves to make themselves cool. And Richard, this is all Richard, he's did a neat thing, but every little piece of those props, like if you shoot a sign on a window, on a building, on an asteroid that's covered with all kinds of other stuff, it'll actually react. It'll blink that you shot it, and it'll break off, but the rest of the asteroids.
Wow.
All that happens. So that literally, some of these pieces are hundreds, or over 100 anyway, of props. Yeah. And it's really cool. Yeah. It's something, again, that we're glad that Unity can manage that, because we couldn't personally manage it. We just create a rule set for building them.
And also people notice in the trailer that the shockwaves will make all the plant life on the asteroids rustle in the wind.
Oh, yeah. <laughs> Oh, yes. Yeah, it's all these details, again, that people may or may not notice, but it's there. The reason that those level features went away, like Richard had these really cool... He had this really cool holodeck asteroid that had these big holes in it, and it was something you could fly through, and it was cool, and it was great. But one day there was this bug with the mass bomb. I was working on area hazards, and instead of making the mass bomb have a radius of about 100 meters, I made it have a radius of 100,000 meters, and it obliterated the level. And it was really cool, but then there was this thing left over, and like, well, that's not so cool. You know, it was neat to have be able to just absolutely blow everything to pieces. So then we made the change, and it was a really good change.
Yeah. At that time, a lot of the stuff really wasn't quite there yet in terms of the destruction. But once I said, to hell with it, we're going to commit to 100% destruction. You know, things like the billboard signs, I said, okay, we're going to break those in half, and then those halves are going to break, and then those halves are going to break and break and break, break. So, like, some of that stuff was, you know, you could push it around, but until we made that call, it was just a one-off object. So, very quickly, the objects that didn't get cut turned into about 12 objects.
Yeah, yeah. If you can see it, you can turn it to dust, or throw it at someone, or pull it. You can make a shell of stuff around you if you want. You can do lots of stuff.
If somebody has
their shields down, you can grab them. That's something cool, too. You could take, if someone's got a little fighter, like the enemy sends a little fighter at you, and his shields are down, instead of throwing an asteroid at him, just grab the bugger and throw him into a rock.
Or back at the other guy.
Yeah, because shields are slippery for the tractor beams, but if you're not shielded, yeah. If you want, if you knock someone's wing off, or someone knocks your wing off, take the wing and just start beating them with it. Hammer and wing.
But you said you could also, like, take pieces and build a shell around you?
Yeah, you could put stuff in between you and what is shooting at you. Now, big stuff has more mass, right? So the tractor beam, if you take a little asteroid, your tractor beam will pull it around like there's no problem. But you could take one of these asteroids with buildings on it, grab the tip of the building, because that's like a big arm, and the physics all works. That's all thanks to Unity. I didn't do any work for that. But you grab it way out at the tip, and you grab it, and you can pull it right down into the plane and make a big wall if you want. It won't last long, but it's protection. It's neat.
So what about how do your sensors work? Like if I'm – say I'm in multiplayer or whatever, or even against the AI, it's pretty important. So if I hide behind an asteroid, you said I can use it as cover, but does it actually blind the enemy to where I am, or they still see like a big blip on the radar like, hey, he's right there behind that asteroid?
Oh, yeah. They know where you are. Yeah. There's not an idea of something being occluded. It's just you're there. The levels are fairly large, but because of the complexity of the battle, we're not going to have 20 motherships all fighting, because then you lose the duel, then it just comes down to bullets everywhere, and everybody dies. Kind of focus on one or two guys that you're fighting. We may or may not do cloak. Rich is really pulling for cloak. I'm like, oh, this is going to be so hard. So mainly because of all the pieces. Like, this is something that, this is, again, nerd talk, but like if someone makes a really nice, sexy ship for a game, that ship, for the most part, is just, you know, this is one drunk call. This is Richard talk, but you could go into it. But our ships are hundreds because they're all pieces, and you're building them on the fly. We don't need any.
And the big bottleneck comes where when you take a ship that we've built and you look at all the pieces that are going into it and how much texture is going across, and you're like, okay, this total ship is pushing like, you know, 10,000 polys or 20,000, arbitrary number, it doesn't matter. Mm. You have to start and stop another complete separate object. That adds like a lot of cost. And a lot of people take that, I think they take that for granted. Like, we, you know, whereas before we had one object as a ship, now we have, in like Call of Duty, or the best shooter you can come up with, you know, they're going to have the one character model and the one gun. So it's just two objects. But we need to manage like an ocean of 50 objects all parented together. It's definitely not free. And it definitely, we have to be careful how we design the game. We can't commit to 20 motherships beating the crap out of each other because 20 times 40 times draw calls equals someone going to run this game.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, we want to have big battles, and that's where the smaller ships come to play. We do have the single object smaller ships, so I always look at this game like Battlestar Galactica. So you got the Battlestar Galactica, and it's awesome, and it's made of hundreds of parts, and it breaks like glass, and it looks awesome. But, you know, you're launching Raptors and Vipers and all that other crap. That can be a build that you make, like where you're more of an aircraft carrier, and that's where the big scale battles will come into play. So we might only have, you know, 3, 4, or 5 Battlestar Galacticas having a fight, but we'll have a bunch of drones flying around.
But that'll still be awesome if it's explodey enough. I mean, I don't know if anyone can complain about that. I did want to ask a real quick thing about the modular thing, since we're kind of on that topic. Like, how is your mothership limited to what kind of parts they can put on the ship? Is it a mass thing? Is it a slot thing? What's preventing the player from putting everything from every other ship onto their ship? You know what I mean?
Well, that's the main, if you think about it, that's the main metagame mechanic is how much essentially command do you have over the ship? How many of these little cubes can you use? And it's a pretty interesting problem, and if you think about it, because we have small, medium, and large parts. So we got what we'll call 1-bangers, 2-bangers, and 3-bangers. A 1-banger has 1 connection point, a 2-banger has 2 connection points, and a 3-banger has 3 connection points. And each one's about twice as good as the one before. Mm. So when you start the game, they give you the ability to handle 0 or 1 cubes, right? Like you have your core, your main core of your ship, and 1 extra cube. Now, if you even just think of it at that level, if I put the cube to the side, that means I can put a big engine of a nose on, or a medium size, but only small wings. So I can go, I can hit things hard, like noses are shields, engines are speed, wings are turning, and wings have. So I can make a good ramming ship, or if I put them in line, I can make a really maneuverable ship, but it's not quite as fast, and it might have bigger guns, but it maneuvers, but it's not going to go anywhere. So it's kind of self-managing. As soon as you get 3, then you can either create this kind of L-shaped Frankenstein if you want to, or you can say, okay, I can now do some really special stuff. Then you hit 4, then you can go like, okay, I have now, you know, 2 medium-sized wings, and medium-sized nose, and medium-sized back, and the game is progressing that way. And what you have to do, as you find these better and better pieces, which you're finding all the time, and you take their power when you kill them, so you take these pieces off the enemies you've killed, and you put them on your ship. If you see someone with a really kick-ass wing piece that's got these like leech beams that are awesome and this big mass bar, oh, I want that so bad! Well, break it off the ship. You know, break it off before the ship explodes, because it might destroy it in an explosion. But, you know, think about it. Again, it's always thinking and planning. I want that thing before I kill that ship. Knock the wing off. Good. Take that wing, put it away somewhere, right? And blow the ship up, and then it's yours. And it's pretty... There's a lot of thought involved. Like, it seems, because our building is on the fly, you'd think it isn't deep, but it's actually extremely deep, because you have to think about even the arcs of your turrets. Like, will this piece next to my gun obstruct my gun too much? Because your guns aren't allowed to shoot through your ship. You have to think about the shape of your ship. You have to think about everything.
Right.
And,
okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's a constant juggle between like how maneuverable you are, how powerful you are, your guns are,
right,
how much armor you have, that kind of thing.
Yes, essentially it's level 2, I can do 2 cubes. Level 3, I can do 3 cubes. Level 4 cubes. You know, is it makes you get, allow you to have bigger, 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 and you unlock bigger, bigger parts in the world. And the longer you survive, the more badass you can build your ship.
Nice. Yes. So I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about some of the metagame. For example, in the features, you mentioned that there are dozens or hundreds of other captains out there doing pretty much the same thing as you are, trying to get better ships and build bigger fleets and stuff like that. Like, do they have, like, what differentiates them? Do they have different personalities, different stats? Like, how is, like, one different from the other?
They will get stats when they're born. So born meaning,
yeah,
when you spawn the galaxy, everybody's going to get their stats, all 200 of them, and they'll get themselves a portrait. So we're trying to, I mean, within a budget, right? Because 200 portraits aren't cheap. So what we're hoping is that by the time, like right now, if things change and with like expansion and stuff, it might be more portraits, but they add up. If you think 200 portraits and you know, how much would each portrait cost?
Mm-hmm.
What happens is they get assigned a picture and a set of personality, and then they just go. So they might be bastards, they might be good guys, but in the end, what happens with the metagame is resource scarcity rules the day. So even if you're a really nice guy, eventually you're going to get to the point where it's just you and some other guy with a can of beans left, and you're going to come into conflict over that can of beans. And that's kind of how it all works. We call it the Petri dish right now. We're going to do a video about it and probably just show a time-lapse or something of the galaxy. We don't really have it planned exactly how we're going to do it yet. We need to make it look a little cuter than it does now. It's cubes and triangles and things right now. It's a very functional tech demo, but not, it doesn't look representative of the game yet, which we want it to be before people see it and they might have their own impression of it. But sure, it's a game in itself. It's quite fun to actually not, believe it or not, it's fun to not play it and turn it on. Turn off the fog of war and just watch. And you see this zombie outbreak happen. You see, you know, certain fleets getting big and nasty and other ones dying off. And sometimes you even root for a bad guy. You're like, no, he's absolutely surrounded by a horde. Get out of it, get out of it, get out of it. No! And you feel bad for him because, you know, he's had a tough time. And you can see him getting just slowly worn down and worn down. It's meant to be like a zombie movie, too. Healing takes time. You get worn down. They're chasing you, these zombies, all the time. People die. Wow. There's more. Right? Everybody's persistent. I'm probably saying too much, actually, right? Or she'll kick me soon. But, yeah.
That's fine.
So it's pretty – we're pretty proud of how that's turned out. Like, it turned out – you know, everyone always says, oh, we got this living world, blah, blah, blah. But this is actually a Petri dish right now. It's fun to watch. It doesn't look like much aside from cubes fighting triangles, but hey, you know, of different colors, but – when a cube and a triangle meet, there is a battle, and the battle is cool. You know?
That's a start. So yeah. The zombies are a force like, right earlier in the game, like maybe right from the beginning, or much earlier in the game than they were in the first game?
They will be around either from the start or very near the start, but
okay,
this is a post-apocalyptic game. Isn't that what we call it?
Something, the apocalypse has an apocalypse.
Yeah, so... We liked what we did last time where you kind of get a sense for how the world works, and then we introduce the zombies into that instead of saying, like, we don't just drop you in and like, there's zombies everywhere, fight to survive. What we do is we say, okay, this is the world, that we defeated the zombies, and it's kind of this new equilibrium of scavenging society and survive. Oh, crap, we didn't actually kill all the zombies.
We're doing 28 weeks later versus 28 days later, so it's the apocalypse again. But we'll see it in a different, much more Petri dishy kind of way this time. So can't talk about it too much because we're still just...
Yeah,
we don't have to. You know, everything we talked about with, you know, living, breathing galaxy and 200 free-roaming agents, just remember, death is not the end.
Well, right, yes. And I wanted to ask about... I mean, you said that the agents can make factions and you can make a faction. What is that? Like, is that a bunch of other agents making one under one flag? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, a faction is essentially a bunch of people who decide to work together.
Right.
Because if what happens is if you, we try and model it on what, what we would think would happen in the real world. But if two people decide to work together, they have a huge advantage. And right. other people must do that as well to remain relevant in the world.
Sure.
Now, the problem that we run into when two people work together is they consume more resources and there's going to start to be friction. So these factions, if they cannot maintain themselves or if they lose too much territory or whatever, they're going to break down. So it's kind of constantly in flux.
Oh, nice. And
the AI can do whatever you can do. What's meant to happen is you start a game with 200 agents, with 200 factions. You end the game with one faction fighting zombies or two or whatever. You don't know how it's going to go, and we don't know how it's going to go. We set out a set of rules, and it's by watching what the Petri dish does, the zombies always win. Eventually, they wear you down. So nice. It's a zombie movie. But this time you can play it again and again and not be getting the same experience both times. Or mostly not the same experience.
Now, I wanted to ask, I don't know if this is in the metagame or not, but since there are other factions and other captains out there, are there, like, thematic options you can have as a faction or a captain? Like, instead of fighting this other captain, can you maybe talk to them and trade with them and engage with them?
For sure.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, great. So is there also
Not just fight. Like, trading will be important this time. Like, last time you could do it a bit, but it'll be important this time.
Oh, good. And will there also be, like, I'd love it if there was espionage. Like, can I be friendly with this other faction? And I can't stand this faction, so I'm going to send a spy to sabotage them. Or,
yes.
Or build friction.
Being a jerk is something we want to be able to empower people to do. You're a space pirate. We've talked about some interesting things where we can manipulate the AI in a friendly or non-friendly state to do bidding for you. It's even gone to the point where we've discussed, like, dropping a link of sausages behind you to attract other zombies or other players into conflict.
We can say what it is. We're evil. We can talk about dropping goons.
Well, you know, dropping food for zombies. We're considering everything, and you know, you're still space pirate, so you're not super pleasant.
I'll give an evil scenario, and then you'll get the idea of just kind of bad people we are. So here's a scenario, because we very much believe in emergence in game. We give you lots of tools, and we let you do what you want to do. So here's a scenario.
Yay.
I am weak, and there is a ship chasing me. The ship that is chasing me, if I were to drop some res or some goons or whatever, we would probably stop and pick them up, because that's what it's after, and it's very low risk for them. So what I would do is I would, unfortunately, because I'm a bastard, I would drop a bunch of my crew. Now, you know, and it would create a field of these guys for them to pick up. Escape pods, great. Pick them up on the map. That's great. What that also does, because zombies like to eat people, is it puts out a bit of a smell. And beyond that, I could make a noise with my ship. I could do a radar ping, and it works a lot like submarines, so I could ping. And I could attract an absolute mountain of zombies to this nice smelly pile of humans that this guy is mining. Let the zombies attack him, wear him down, fight him, or run away and laugh, or be, you know, just, it's evil. But we give you the tools to be good or evil, right? But, you know, being evil can be more fun. Sometimes.
So that's kind of like throwing bait in the water and bringing the sharks.
Throwing chum in the water, yeah.
Yeah. You can turn around a bad situation pretty quickly if you're willing to make some moral choices that are a little bit questionable. But those moral choices are things that people will talk about, and again, that changes your faction relationship as well, right?
So what if you throw your crew out, but they've got a grenade in their pocket, right? So when they pick them up, they, you know, like a suicide vest on your astronaut, and you pick him out the door.
Sabotage very much will be part of it.
Yay!
What about a bacon wrapped Ewok, and you can kick him out the airplane? That will be your zombie. Yeah. You can only get them on the forest planets.
You guys probably know more now about the metagame than anyone. Yeah. I should probably
start to realize how much work we've done.
Okay, well let's move. I wanted to ask you one more thing about, two more things about the meta. Well, one more thing about the metagame and one more thing about the living universe. You mentioned these timed story events. Can you elaborate on those a little bit? Like, how does that work? Do they just pop up randomly and they have a set time limit and they'll finish without you?
It's a survival game. So right.
happens is at a certain point in any survival game, you get to the point where you're kind of at a King of the Hill scenario. Like, I get it now. I'm nothing. And what we do is we keep dropping new things into the what we call the Petri dish, which is the star map. You know, this area where we have all those tools. Like, we drop in new changes to the equilibrium. So it's like, instead of there just being sharks in the ocean, there's sharks with laser beams on their heads in the ocean. And these people are in the ocean. Now they're cutting up whales, and it's getting worse, you know. So we keep doing that, but we do that on a bike in the game, essentially. So just like Spaz 1, we don't hold your hands. We don't say, we're gonna make the zombies tougher now because we think you're ready for it. It's like now, as it was in Spaz 1, it's if you're not ready for it, too bad, maybe next time. is what it's going to come down to, because you're meant to play this more than once. Most people are going to die the first few times they do it, and that's okay. Right. I'm hoping people don't get mad about that, but you're probably not going to win the first time you play, whatever the win scenario is, because we're not, also not having an end this time. Like, most people want a game plus at the end, so we're not going to say, you're done! Don't play with your ship anymore! We're going to let you just keep going and deal with it, right? So, we're trying to keep the world interesting and make it harder and harder, bigger and bigger challenges as you play. And we figure that this time scenario, you know, ready or not, that's the only thing that's going to be the same through the games. Oh, crap, it's day 10. Zombies now have tentacles. No! You know, something like that. And it's 3 times you died, but you realized, oh, you know what's really good for tentacles? Garden shears. And you put some garden shears. That's how it's going to work.
So those are kind of persistent, these story-based events.
The galaxy has just gotten worse. Someone just dropped a nuke. Someone just dropped some Ebola. It's worse. You know, you thought it was bad. No, now it's worse. And you have to somehow still survive. And that will cause the fracturing in those factions as well. That will cause the resources to get used up. All that stuff that brings people into conflict. Like, the zombie games so much about the zombies, it's about the interaction with all these captains that you maybe even made friends with. You're at some point going to have to shoot your friend with a can of beans. And that's what we find to be the interesting part. The zombies are mainly driving you through it versus being, they're not the star, right? The star is the people. The zombies are an environmental hazard more than anything. They're a plot device.
Right. So my other question, in a different direction. When you call this a living universe, you have your factions and your captains and your zombies. What else is in there? Will there be like civilians going about their business? Will there be space monsters? I mean, are there other things to fill in the living universe?
Well, living for us right now is essentially this post-apocalyptic society is a scavenging society. So so far we've never had aliens in the game. I don't know, maybe for the story, maybe not, but I doubt it for the most part.
For the most part, these 200 agents is the metagame.
So it's kind of like Mad Max, post-apocalyptic.
That's right. I don't know if you guys ever played Stalker, because they had like a...
I just started playing that.
Right. You know how, like, they have other stalkers roaming around and you can trade with them? Some of them want to shoot you. Like, that's kind of...
That
inspiration a little bit. So, but we also understand things like the rules of conservation. So we need to... There's still some moment-to-moment combat-related things that need to happen, and we're just not quite ready to talk about those things yet, but we don't want to end up with a situation where the galaxy just has two people left and they're fighting. So there's other things to the metagame that we need to put in to fill out some of those experiences a bit, but we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, I mean, we've hinted at it, but we can say that, you know, a person dies. In any zombie movie, a person dies, if they're infected, they become a zombie. So if the game starts with 200 and, say, one guy, 200 humans and one zombie, the game will end with 200 zombies and one human, is what it'll come down to.
We've even discussed very briefly, like, the idea of roaming packs of drones that don't have a mothership to fill in some spaces in between the game, because, like, you know, even with 200 dudes and it's a big galaxy, it might take a while, but... we're going to show all this stuff off when we've made the metagame look like not grade cubes. It's very early. Very early.
No, man, I love games with metagames. I like Rise of Nations and Emperor of Dude and Warlord's Battlecry. Just stuff with like those metagames that kept you going. I love stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like, yo, dude, I heard you like games, so I put a game in your game.
Well, actually, hey, dog. I guess the big thing of this one is in our metagame, time actually passes on like the last one.
Yeah.
So
when you move, so when you're fighting, time isn't really passing. But when you are moving around the star map, time is passing. So if you are not in motion, I mean, it works in Mountain Blade. It's not the same thing. If your horse isn't moving, time isn't moving. In Mountain Blade, if your horse is moving, time is moving. Everybody's going about their business, doing their own thing. So it gives you the ability to think about your actions, but you can't really take advantage of that. You can think of things like, oh, should I go and I mine there? Should I kill that guy? But once you start moving, everybody's moving together at once, which is kind of neat.
Oh, okay.
It's just fair.
Now, what
the
kind
AI
of
is not even going to know you're a human in this game. The AI. Will not treat you any different than it treats someone else it meets. It's just going to look at what it thinks of you, and it's going to do what it's going to do.
And operates by the same rules as the player.
Yeah. That's right. Everything that the player can do. I mean, it's the same even in the battle. In the battle, when the AI flies, it says, push forward on the push the forward button. Push the brake button. Just like a human does.
Every captain is a snowflake. You're not a special guy. Yes, you're just a generically totally unique snowflake.
His name was Robert Paulson. He's.
That's funny. Good old fight
club. Oh my god! So, like, what are the different kind? Like the last time, your drones were all over the place. You had some that were really good at. Like some more gunships and some were little interceptors and stuff like that. Like, what kind of variety can we expect with the drones this time?
We haven't actually made drones yet.
It's just kind of a terminology mix-up, actually. It's just the reason we call them drones is they started out as drones for implementation for Scarface 2. Spaz 2, my apology. But they're really just fighters.
Okay.
They're the single ships that you can pilot that are not part of your mothership. And you might have quite a few of these. They are going to encompass everything of what used to be considered a drone, probably all the way up to maybe even a medium class now.
I see. Well, that's kind of what I meant, like the ships you fly around. I thought right. I was trying to use the same terminology.
Yeah, sorry. I shouldn't call them drones. They're fighters, and they'll come in little kind of Viper style fighters, as well as something almost to the size of the Defiant from Star Trek. Like I said, they're single one off ships. You can fly everything under your command now, so we don't have little ships that you can't fly.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so like even the tiniest little thing, you'll be able to take control of it and fly it. Now, you might have a bunch of them, and it might not be very advantageous to fly that thing individually, but just the way we've built the game this time around, there's absolutely no reason why we couldn't let you fly absolutely everything.
And the little ships have one big benefit, too. Because of how our turrets work, they can get into places where the big ships can't hit them so easily.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're fast. So for the most part, beams are super accurate, but they're not really the long range weapon in Spaz 2. The long range weapon is the cannons. So you can weave in and out of the cannon fire fairly effectively with a small ship. But the big ship, it's a big beast. Unless you really design it with some big, big wings to make it turn fast, and unless you're really, really good and maneuverable, you're gonna get thumped a little bit when it's like battleship versus battleship. They're just not that maneuverable. No. So they do have a purpose. And they're fun to fly.
Sorry, now my next question, will there be, like the last game had a tactical view, which is great. I really love that, where you could like stop for a second. You go over here and protect this ship. You go over here and fight this ship. Is there going to be that again this time around? Because that really worked well, I think.
We don't have one currently. We do have a lot more Zoom, which people really wanted more of last time. So we at least have that.
We have a lot more what? I'm sorry.
Well, we let you zoom out and observe the entire battlefield, but it doesn't quite work like the way the tactics panel used to at the moment.
Oh, okay.
A little underdeveloped, but we do have to figure out the hurdle of multiplayer and not creating a system that's different for both. So right. even if we did a tactic something, it probably won't pause the game like it used to. You want to have some level of customizable control for your other sub-agents. We're not sure what that'll look like at the moment.
I have a feeling, I mean, this is just designing on the fly, but with how we can kind of select in 3D so well now, like 3D in the 2D plane, I'm sure we can have like, you go here kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about. Like, what if you want these ships to protect your mothership and these ships to fight these guys over here, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Like, I was like, the tactical view would have made a great way to do that. But in a 3D space, you can still do it. It's just going to be a little different.
Yeah, and even the 3D space isn't really the problem. I think to some degree we can't live without this, for sure.
Yeah.
It's just we need to figure out a solution for multiplayer that works well with both systems so that we're not teaching you two different things. So it's different because last time we had the liberty to pause the game and stop everything and give commands and then resume the game. So it'll have to go through a change.
Right.
Yeah. The game, it comes down to like follow, stay, kill, right? Follow is
protect. Right.
Stay is stay here. Kill is kill. If something comes near you, always kill. So it shouldn't be too bad.
No, yeah. it might be more something that you'd expect to see in like a real time strategy where you're giving orders and they're being executed immediately on the spot.
Or I'm thinking maybe even something like, did you guys ever play the SWAT games?
Like the old school ones?
Yeah, SWAT like 3 and 4. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember playing them a bit back in the day. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was thinking something along the line. There might be like this might be a good thing for like a contextual menu. Like, say you select a bunch of ships, then you select another ship if it's an enemy you have an order to attack or board or whatever. But if it's a friendly, you have an order to protect.
Yeah, that's very much like StarCraft or something where, yeah, like a contextual right click. We'll have to look into some of this stuff and see how much of it. Is also how much of it is really like required for our new design. So we don't want to add too much stuff if we don't feel that it's contributing to the overall experience, but we definitely want you to be able to manipulate the AI in some way. We're just not sure what that'll look like right now. We might even have something that looks a little bit more like what you saw in Dragon Age where you can manipulate a brain.
Don't sign me up for that.
I'm not signing you up for anything. This is so raw, we don't know what it looks like yet. So we're talking about something that neither of us have really designed or built. So it's just, this is
about the level that Rich and I design at. So you're at a design meeting
right
now?
We're at a design meeting, yeah. We haven't had enough beer for this.
Yeah, so we don't know. Most things is... If it turns out once Rich and I are fighting online quite a bit that we need more like a certain type of more control or whatever, then suddenly we'll start building something and the first iteration will be absolutely terrible and overly complex and we'll just work on it until it's something that people can actually digest. I think there will in the end be something, but yeah, we have no idea what it shall be. The good thing is right now even without the game is so tactical. But mostly what you do right now is you're mainly concerned, I'm flying this big, giant ship, and my other ships are kind of sailing, and it just works. So that works quite well right now.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's pretty awesome. I'm kind of out of questions.
You guys have pretty much answered everything I prepared. And we don't want to give away too much, you know.
But it's good. I mean, we want you to have information anyway. Like, we're trying this time to like be, oh, we've got a teaser trailer. We're showing you the game and all these plans. But us being us, we're just not going to be able to market it properly. So let's just tell you a few things. And that's what we did.
Stuff's going to change. We're going to go through a lot of iterations.
But no Kickstarter. So
like I said, I think we would have failed the Kickstarter.
It would have been weird.
Yeah. It's just we're just too iterative. It just takes forever.
People would hate us if we had a Kickstarter.
Yeah, here's A. We gave you B.
Sorry.
They should have a website that's called Beer Starter, where you just buy a dev of beer. It's just like, I just want to send you $5. It's a tip jar.
We're making a game. We're not going to tell you what it is, but we're working on it. We're not going to tell you. Give us your money. Like that. It wouldn't work.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's fine. Stick with your vision, you know, so, that's what matters most.
So what else are you guys playing? Do you play stuff, or you just develop full-time?
I actually saw on Space Game Junkie just the other day that Drox Operative was coming to Steam, and I was like, oh, crap, I should try that. So I bought it off the website because I know the pain of the indie developer. So
that's our new game of the weekend.
It's quite neat, yeah.
Isn't it great?
Yeah. It's a nice one that you can just kind of sit there and it's, you're not actively constantly having to be doing something, which I like because I'm a little bit of a lazy gamer.
Right.
I like to be able to just kind of think about the scenario. What do I want to do? I quite recommend that game. It's fun. I probably play a little tonight because I'm right new to it. I think my ship's like level 3 or something.
Oh, okay. That is a fantastic game, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
it's really
good.
Fantastic
game, yeah. I put probably way too many hours into that one.
Oh, the new XCOM. That new XCOM with that expansion pack. Oh, that was good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
What have you been up to, Richard?
Oh, geez. There's a little bit of a dry spell right now, so I'm pretty much just sticking to my Sins of a Solar Empire.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah. Totally. What are you guys playing?
Well, I'm going to mention it again. Jumpgate's back. I don't know if you've heard of Jumpgate.
Never heard of it. What is that?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Andrew Richard.
It rings a vague bell.
It came out in 2001. It's a first-person flight sim, space sim, MMO. And
is that that one that's also slightly 2D?
It's all 3D. You're in a cockpit. You're flying a ship. It's all 3D. And
right.
It was shut down in 2012, but some Russian programmers somehow hacked it and brought it back to life. No one knows how, but it's free now and everything.
Free game, that's spyware.
You know, it might be. Oh, shit.
Better check your Norton.
But that's what I've been playing a lot of. To the detriment of the site, I must apologize because it has me by the short and close pretty bad.
Yeah,
what about you, Jim?
Well, I'm still playing some Void Destroyer, and I would urge you guys to take a look at Void Destroyer because it's pretty neat. It's like completely out of the wheelhouse of what you're doing. But he's doing a. Did you ever play Homeworld? I know you played Homeworld. It's kind of a reboot of Homeworld. And
cool.
Yeah, so I sent over Paul a laundry list of things to make the game perfect, and hopefully he'll get some of that in there. But it's all
just one guy.
Yeah, it's one dude making this thing. And when you look like look it up on get some screenshots and look at what he's got
I've almost checked the Bible.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of it and I'm like so Richard and I do were like, oh no, another space sim. Okay, it's nothing like our skin. There's always that worry. It used to be when Spaz 1 came out, it was nothing. No space game. Now when there's one every week.
And we blame
you. No. Oh my god. I always tell people when I started the site, I thought because I originally planned to go back over older games and stuff. And when I started it, I thought it'd be like the occasional new game.
Yeah, it was like, thank God for good old games because we wouldn't have anything. And then all of a sudden,
yeah,
Kickstarter
crazy.
Erupted.
It's incredible.
But we blame you for the success of Space Pirates and Zombies clearly inspired Chris Roberts to come out of retirement.
It probably, seriously, I don't think Jim is wrong here. It probably did help. It probably saw that, hey, not only do people still want these, but people are willing to pay for them.
Maybe. I always feel like we got extremely lucky. Like there was all this stuff that was right on the doorstep and we somehow got in before it.
No, we're awesome.
But now the competition's really up there. But I mean, it's great to see all these good space games. That's quite nice. And I like the fact that we look different. That's all Richard. I mean, he's very good at what he does. So thank you, Richard.
You're welcome. Yeah, I dream of rainbows.
Yeah.
That's great. So I'm losing coherence. So oh my god. Wow, we should probably start wrapping this up. We've been talking a while. I think it's been almost 2 hours since we.
Yeah, we ought to get Brian out of here before he passes out. He turns into a pumpkin about 10 o'clock.
I have had 3 shots of tequila, so that's probably not helping.
That's been fun anyway. I quite like this interview.
yeah, gentlemen, Andrew, Richard, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of, I'm sure, your insane schedule, not only PR, but putting this game together to give us all this fantastic info. I guess the last question I have is, do you have any idea of a release date? Because people are going to ask about that. So do you have any idea, even a rough guesstimate of a release date? Like 2016, well, Steam, something like that.
On Steam right now, I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because we're not great at estimating these things. But we hope to be on early access once we have a game that people can finish and enjoy. And then they can help us a lot with the balancing. And we have a big fear about the multiplayer because it's two guys testing this thing. So another thing that's going to happen before early access is we're going to put out a Wake Island-style free multiplayer version of Spaz level, like just a level, where everyone can just play it. And we want to find out what kind of, like, we want to find out what kind of load can our matchmaking server take and these kind of things. And hopefully if people haven't paid for it, they won't come after us with pitchforks and things if we made a few mistakes, because it is just two guys and we're competent designers and we're competent at art and we're competent at programming, but we're not experts at any of these things.
Right.
I would never consider myself an expert programmer in any field, but I am competent in enough to make a game come together and hopefully not crash. So if we come into a scenario with this Wake Island-y style thing where I made a big misassumption with how multiplayer works, then we can get one of my friends who actually does that from the industry, and I can say, will you please fix my mess, and get that fixed before people are actually paying us money for something. Right now, it's great. Like, Richard is quite impressed with how we connect, so that's cool.
Yeah, it works better than some of the AAA games that I can't get to work.
But that's mostly Unity. Unity's got this good Mac punch through and stuff, so we're able to, without doing a lot of router configuring or anything, we just find each other and play. And it's quite funny, like when Richard and I will sometimes be working on the game and accidentally collect multiplayer, because we're always, the game right now is always multiplayer as we work, just because of how we do it. So I'll be in a level, I'm like, get the fuck out, get out of my level, I'm trying to test something. You know? It's quite funny, it's just like there shooting at something, get out of here, I don't want you in here, I'm working.
I happen to consume my the same server name as whatever I palmed into the keypad.
Yeah. Well, that was actually nice once I put profiles into the game, because now in the registry it saves your last server name, so now it's Blorf server or whatever, Dr. Smash's server. we don't run into each other anymore, because before the collisions were just nuts. And the worst was on my old 7-year-old, I call it the shitbox, but my old computer here, I will, when I'm testing the network, be running two iterations of the game at once on my little computer to see, like, is what I'm seeing in screen A, does that look like what's happening in screen B? Yes? Oh, that's good. No? Oh, that's bad. Let's fix that. And then suddenly the original pop, they're like, oh, my computer is going to just implode. This is too much. So, because I'm actually running right through, one of them will be running right through the whole Unity IDE as well, right? So there's a whole bunch of overhead there. It's crazy. More tech speak that I don't know if anyone understood.
No. People love that stuff.
Okay.
People really,
but
love
it's fun
stuff.
To work on this game, obviously.
Right.
So that's good.
Awesome. Well, gentlemen, again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your assuredly insane schedule to join us. It's been very enlightening. I'm even more excited about this game now, and I'm just kind of sad it's going to be so long until we can play it.
But it's
kind of funny. Even though I say that, there's just so much other stuff coming out. Like you said, it's like, oh, we'll get by.
There's a lot of stuff. It's fine. We'll put some stuff out every, I don't know, every 4 months, 3 months, whatever, and keep you somewhat satisfied.
If I can give you a suggestion, put out at least one thing a month.
Oh my god. 3 weeks to make this trailer, man.
No, it doesn't even have to be a video. It could be like a dev blog with Scott.
Yeah, well, I put out some stuff. I was even thinking about putting an album of what the game looked like from conceptual stage to now.
Oh, yeah, people eat that up.
Mike Topol, the guy that's working on Enemy Starfighter, which is another super awesome game that you should keep an eye on. Nothing like your game. But he's actually on Twitch TV. He streams his development sessions. So you can watch him actually like banging away at the keyboard, and then he'll open up in another window. He opens up his test thing and shows it. So and he gets a ton of hits on that. So okay, I don't know if that's something you're open to doing, but it's kind of an interesting way. You know, you get to watch him like run it through the debugger and, you know, and all his weird, like kind of some of the like hilarious bugs that he gets in there, and watch him work them out.
I don't know if I have the discipline for that.
Yeah, I'm gonna cry putting my pants on.
Yeah, they go to Reddit like every 20 minutes when I get stuck, and you know, oh man, that'd be crazy. Yeah, no, I don't think that would work very well. I was like, okay, I gotta go look at a picture of a cat or something. This sucks. Oh,
we want to show some people what it looked like from day one, but I mean, over the course of the last 16 months, anytime I see something cool, I've taken a screenshot of it. And slowly, over time, the stuff that I thought was cool 1 week or 1 month in really, really looks like crap now. But I'm sure some people will be really interested to see what we had 2 weeks into development.
We were excited about it. Like, you got that picture of that wing that's like, oh, the wing!
Like, you know, when I started putting some textures and shaders in, and then, you know, and then about 12 months in, we're like, all this is garbage and needs to be redone again. And then it got really good, and then I did it again, and now I'm probably going to do it again. There's like another 3 or 4 games on the cutting room floor.
Oh my god!
Well, at some point we have to show that crazy stress test.
Oh yeah,
but then
7,000.
Then people will want it. Yeah, when I wrote the connection thing for the ships, we did a stress test and made a ship that was just obscenely bigger than anything you'd ever see in the universe of the game. Like literally made out of like 7,000-8,000 pieces. Too big to fly. It looks like a dinner plate, but it worked. It had reactor power. 10 trillion. This thing. We should show that. But yeah, it's not representative of the game. It's just to say, will it crash if I do this? No, it won't. Yeah. That's good.
Oh, sorry, losing it. I should probably write this out. Woof. Okay. All right.
Have another drink, Brian.
No, that won't
every
help.
Time Brian drinks, you have to, or every time Brian yawns, you have to drink. That's the new drinking game.
No, we should have a drinking game where people make me drink, and on the podcast that would probably be entertaining.
Hey, what we should do? We should have done it at the head of the show instead of that's now. Right. But you were talking about having a listener feedback show.
Yes.
And I think we should mention that, because if we have a listener feedback show and we don't actually ask for listener feedback, it's going to be a really short show.
Right, that's true. So, folks, sorry, Andrew and Richard, hang on. Just some business time stuff.
This will be like ventriloquism. Email. While Brian's talking, you guys have to drink.
We have an email address at hail at spacegamejunkie.com. I'll put it in the website as well at the post. We want to do a viewer write-in show where people write in and ask us questions and we answer them for you or to you or at you. Or so, yeah, please do that. And we might do that in a week or two, but that should be fun because we're trying different things. Yeah. Anyway, thank you, everyone, for joining us. Everyone listening, thank you all of us for listening. I'm about to collapse on my desk. I don't know why.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah,
it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure. And we need to have you on again in a little while once maybe the early access version comes out.
Oh, we'll something. Come before that if you want us.
Well, I think I don't know if I can speak for Jim here, but I would like to get some hands-on time with it and then talk again. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see.
At least for me, I ask better questions when I've had some.
Yeah, so, that will be a little while.
That's fine. You get to work then. Go do what you do. go do what you do, and we'll talk again. I'm sure.
I think Brian's saying he asks better questions when he's got tequila in his hand. That's hands on tequila. That's the. So keep drinking, Brian. We're good.
Thank you, Hornitos. Reposado, Nuestro Tequila, Hencho en Mexico, Heco in Mexico. Yeah, that's what the label says. Oh, this this giant bottle. 1.75 liters. Wow. That's a lot.
How much is left?
Well, I think I've gone through about an eighth of it already.
There you go.
And I got it the other day.
So the lesson that we have learned here is do not get into a drinking contest with Canadians because you will lose.
Oh, I have a very low tolerance, so I just
What you got to do, right, is my grandpa taught me this. You got to eat a stick of butter, and that kind of coats your stomach.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And then you can just drink anybody under the table.
Oh, if you're not throwing up half the night. Oh,
true story. True story from grandpa.
Oh, Grandpa.
Maybe
Jesus.
Maybe it's like a lot of his stories. He just told me to see if I'd do it. I don't know.
Probably. Okay, well, we're ending it. That's it. Gotta go. Folks, email us at hail@spacegamejunkie.com. Andrew Richard, thank you for joining us. We are out.
And viva la tequila.
Viva la tequila.
Bye.
Good night.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler. Sure thing. Guys, you're